go back to page 3, the commercial fishery measures, mortality measures, section 4.4.2.
While I start talking, council members may want to dig through their binders and find document number 5, which is a PDT report. This section includes a lot of alternatives for commercial fishery measures. It includes the no-action alternative for adjusting effort controls, which is not expected to meet the mortality objectives. It includes 3 options to that no-action alternative for adjusting effort controls for vessels that choose not to join sectors. Generally speaking, the first option is option 2A, which uses generally differential days at sea and trip limits. The second option is option 3A, which generally speaking uses a 24-hour clock and restricted gear areas. And then the third option is option 4, which uses days at sea reductions and restricted gear areas. These thumbnail descriptions of the alternatives don't do any of them justice. They all have adjustments to trip limits. They all have a number of measures in them. You should refer to the details in the document. As was mentioned earlier, when we brought these to the council in February, shortly before we brought them to the council meeting, we were informed that pollock was overfished, and we determined that these with one exception, these 3 alternatives did not meet the mortality objectives to rebuild pollock. So we had to go out to the public telling people these are the options, but we're going to make changes later to address pollock rebuilding requirements. One option, option 3A, does meet the pollock rebuilding requirements without any changes. If you look at the PDT report that I referenced, document number 5, the PDT actually did some work to make sure our assumptions were right on the mortality objectives with our catch estimates. That's described in the beginning. But the important point, I think, for this discussion is on page 4 of that report, and it's table 4, where we modified the measures for alternative 2A in order to achieve the mortality reductions needed to rebuild pollock. And pretty significant changes to option 2A, I think, rather than an 18% day at sea reduction, you need either a 30 or 35% day at sea reduction. The differential days at sea counting areas are modified. Generally, in the inshore Gulf of Maine, offshore Gulf of Maine, and I think Georges Bank, the rates increased. In southern New England, they decrease. We incorporated a pollock trip limit of 1,000 pounds per day and 10,000 pounds per trip. Now, we presented 2 options. Technically, they both meet the mortality reduction needed. One of them goes a little further. It sort of depends on how the council evaluates the uncertainty with these results, which option they may want to choose. We did not create a similar option for option 4. In part, the only real measures available in option 4, if you want to be consistent with the design of that option, would be to dramatically increase the days at sea reduction from 40%, probably up onto something on the order of 60%. But to be obvious, be honest with you, we did not actually do that calculation because there was, in part, because there was very little support for option 4, if any, I think, in the public hearing comments. So we focused on the options it seemed the council was leaning towards. I can go through the other work that was done to support this if you'd like, but I'm not sure it's particularly germane to this discussion, and you may want to just review it later.
We had roughly 66 comments on the common pool effort controls. The bulk of those were form letter comments that said that the common pool should not be turned into a cesspool and should have viable alternatives. Option 3A got the most support with 11 letters in support, although a lot of those stated a version of the 24-hour clock. And the other ones got just a handful of support and a little bit of opposition. We had several comments on hand gear, including suggestions to raise the trip limit, to increase the number of hooks, and to allow mechanical gear. Other comments we received included that gear shouldn't be approved unless through peer-reviewed studies for the gear-restricted areas. suggestions that we have separate rules for inshore and offshore, and several comments that the Pollock assessment should be revisited.
I have a committee motion to make on behalf of the committee. I move that the council adopt section 4.4.2.3, option 3A, the 24-hour clock with trip limits. That passed the committee 6-4, 1 against, 3 abstentions.
Okay, that was a committee motion. I believe the regional administrator wants to make a few motions to amend, a few tweaks. So before I go to the public, I'll have her put those up, and we'll see if they stick before we go to the public.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This, again, goes back to our letter of June 10th and the comments on this specific motion. And I think for the – I'm fairly certain the committee talked about these and that these are just cleaning up the motion and not particularly controversial, but I think it's worth getting them out there and getting motions on the table. So my first motion is – and Karen should have these – move that the council in section – why don't I wait till – yes. Move that the council in section 4.4.2, commercial fishery measures, prohibit the landing of ocean pout. So I think it was just ocean pout wasn't added to the list of prohibited species in this particular option.
Seconded by Jim Odlin. Discussion? Anyone wish to speak against that amendment? You ready for the motion to amend? All those in favor, raise your hand. Unanimous. 17. Pat.
Thank you. The second motion has to do with the list of gears in this for the gear restricted areas. And again, our discussion about ensuring that we not include gears that haven't gone through the council process of a peer review and the research steering committee recommendations. And so the motion is to move that the five-point trawl, raised foot road trawl, I better read it from the board, and sink gillnet be removed from the list of authorized gear in the SAPs and in the gear restricted areas under section 4.3.7 and 4.4.7 respectively, and that these gears be considered for approval for use under the provisions proposed in section 4.3.7.7, which is the section that talks about the regional administrator authority for approving additional gears.
Is there a second? Seconded by Jim Odlin. Discussion? Dr. Pierce?
The Division of Marine Fishery has done a lot of work on the five-point trawl, a lot of research. However, I do respect the fact that there's a certain procedure to use, and Pat's given this a lot more thought. It makes no sense, I suspect, for us to keep it in the list of gear that can be used. So I will support Pat's decision, recognizing that we strongly suspect that in the not-too-distant future, the service will be in a position to say it is a gear that could be used.
David?
If we approve this motion, what gears will be allowed to be used here?
The list is on page 143 in the document, and so it's the haddock separator trawl, the rule trawl, rope trawl, and long line tub trawls and hand gear.
So there'd be no gill nets allowed, and how will this work for, say, people fishing for monkfish? Will they not be allowed to, because they're the monkfish gill nets, a gill net?
I mean, I'm not sure I should interpret for the service, but that was a concern at the committee and was originally why the gillnets were included in the list of gear, because the southern New England area, I don't know if people want to see it, but I believe I can show it. You know, the southern New England area, and I think there's some monkfish fishermen in the crowd, I believe it does include some areas where there is monkfish caught in here by gillnet vessels as well as by trawls.
My understanding of the gillnets is that the PDT had indicated that the proposal was for no tie down nets allowed unless using mesh over 8 inches, and that there was no information or analysis to indicate what the bycatch rates would be for that. Now, I don't know where the 8-inch mesh came from. I'm pretty sure the monkfish requirement is 10 inch, is it? So at the very least, it should be consistent with the monkfish.
Okay. The reason I'm asking all these questions is if we vote this motion up, this will become incorporated in option 3A. So then when people come to the microphone to comment, it may have changed their opinion rather dramatically of option 3A, whether they prefer that or one of the other options, because this is a fairly major change. So I'm just trying to educate the public in how they should come and comment on this situation. I think I understand what gears now are going to be allowed and what aren't, but this wasn't what we voted on at the Groundfish Committee, so it's a pretty major change.
Anyone else in the council? Mike Leary.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think, I don't know, do I substitute or amend this amended motion to include tie down gillnets greater than 10 inch to provide for the monk fishery that goes on in southern New England? Maybe that'd be friendly.
A friendly at this stage of the day would be great. Does the seconder agree? Does the seconder agree? Mr. Odlin, you agree? Is there any objection? Okay, so now we need to...
The issue is that it shouldn't include tie-down nets. So... The original was no tie-down nets allowed unless using mesh over 8 inches. And it's the tie-down nets that catch the flatfish. So...
Yeah, that's how you catch monkfish with a gill net. Tie-down. Mike...
If this is to prevent the catch of flounder species, I mean, a 10-inch flounder, a flounder that meshes up in a 10-inch net is rather large. I mean, it doesn't happen. Fluke.
Okay, it's in there for now as a friendly. I will get to the audience. I just want to see Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, just a clarification. With regard to the gear being used, if I could ask this question now, Mr. Chairman, before we go to the audience, just to get it square in my mind, I should have picked up on this before, but I didn't. In looking at the gear-restricted area, You know, we have, of course, the luck of the draw in terms of where the coordinates fall, and the upper, off of Rhode Island, southeastern Massachusetts, in the upper right-hand corner, we have a strange boundary that slices through a portion of Vineyard Sound, just north of Martha's Vineyard, encompasses just about all of Vineyard Sound and the backside of Martha's Vineyard. So my question is, if someone has a groundfish permit, but they're inside state waters fishing for squid, would they have to use one of the gear in the list in order to be fishing for squid in those areas? In other words, raised foot rope trawl or haddock separator trawl, eliminator trawl, rope trawl.
No, I think the description of the alternative is this is groundfish fishing on a groundfish day at sea. So I don't think the squid fishery fishes on a groundfish day at sea in those areas.
Dave Gitt.
Wordsmithing here. The way I read this, I think it says the way you've got it worded, it actually removes tie-down gill nets greater than 10 inches. I think what you want to do is at the top, say, and sink gill nets with mesh smaller than 10 inches be removed from the list of authorized gear and strike the last sentence. Because the way it's written right now, you're removing tie-down gill nets greater than 10 inches.
Okay, Karen? You want to move sink gill nets with mesh smaller than 10 inches to after gill nets in the third line, I think. So with mesh smaller than 10 inches, yeah. Highlight that, cut it, and bring it up to the third line and right. Take out the duplicative sink gill nets. Yeah, take that out. I think that's what we were looking for.
Now it says what we mean.
Anything further on this motion to amend? You ready for the question on the motion to amend? All those in favor, raise your hand. Fifteen. Opposed. Any abstentions? Motion to amend carries 15-0-0.
I have one more than just a comment. The third motion has to do with, again, in the letter to the council, we recommended that for administration and enforcement of the gear restricted areas, that some additional restrictions be implemented, including things like a letter of authorization, a measure on when the vessel could fish inside and outside of these areas on the same trip, but would be subject to more restrictive measures, and that the gear performance standards would apply to the gear used in these areas. And so I'd like to move that the council adopt the recommendations for additional restrictions on gear-restricted areas as proposed in the June 10, 2009 letter from the National Marine Fisheries Service. And this is on page 4 of the June 10th letter.
Is there a second? Seconded by Jim Otto. Discussion? Dave Gaethel?
No.
Dave Gaethel? No. Anyone? Anyone on the motion to amend? Ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. 16, unanimous. And now we have a main motion as
sorry,
amended.
Just...
Pat?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sorry, just one other small thing. The very last comment or issue that we had on this was that there are several outstanding questions related to the description of the rope trawl that need to be resolved. And so I just propose that that we work with our gear experts and the council staff on refining the description of that before the amendment is finalized. Or I should say before the amendment is submitted.
I think that's better than us trying to do it here. Yeah. Now we have a main motion as amended three times. Go to the public for comments. Maggie. Then Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to speak first to the amendment about the gear that would be allowed in the area. And I think what we really want to do on the sink gill net issue is to allow tie down gill nets of 10 inch or greater, which is what it says, and to allow stand up gill nets of regulated mesh for ground fish, because a stand up gill net doesn't impact flounders. And we've done that many times before when we've had issues with gill nets and flounders and how you control the issues on that. In fact, one time we had a restriction that you couldn't put stand-up gill nets because we were concerned about cod. So I'm hoping that we can get that issue straightened out. There is a difference between the two gears, and it's the tie-down nets that impact the flounders, not the stand-up nets. And I don't find the RA's letter of June 10th in the council binder. So I'm still looking for that, and I might have to come back on that last issue if and when I find it. To the main motion for adoption of option 3A, we did support, Associated Fisheries of Maine did support that option in our public comments. We continue to reluctantly support that, understanding that none of the options are particularly desirable. We support it because we think it's the simplest of the three, meets the biological objectives. There was an issue raised by the advisors about the 24-hour clock, and the recommendation, as I understood it, was to see if it was necessary to that apply to every day of the trip. And this was an issue that was raised by the day boat fleet, who was concerned about getting charged 48 hours when they were out for 24 hours and 2 minutes. So again, we support option 3A. We recommend that change regarding the gill neck gear, and I'm not sure about the last one because I can't find the letter, but thank you.
Maggie, if you're looking for the letter, you just got handed it.
Thank you.
David?
Yes, thank you. I think Maggie got it right for the gill net stuff, because if you're suggesting that we can fish a stand-up net with mesh greater than 10 inches, are you suggesting we start a fishery for marine mammals? That's all you're creating by doing that. I mean, there's no ground fish that are going to get messed up in 10-inch gear. you know, if it's stand-up, yeah. But, we don't catch flounders with a stand-up gill net. It's, you know, we tie them down and target flounders specifically. The 8-inch pot was wrong, right? That's flounder gear. If I was going to, you know, go target flounders, I'd use seven-inch mesh or possibly eights with some gray sole and stuff. But, you know, you need to have it in there. And there's one other safety issue relevant to the gillnet fleet, and it's these our set days. All right? Now, if we're going to have 24-hour days, and we're going to be subject, gillnets work on soak time. We go back the next day and all. I think it's patently unfair given, you know, essentially we're going to be looking at, what, 20 trips, 22, 24 trips off the dock for the year. And we have to give up, but if you get a, you know, you get a stretch of bad weather, you know, what are your options? You're going to have to give up a 24-hour day to bring your gear home or leave your nets out and let the fish rot out of the nets or ignore safety altogether and leave the dock in a 35-foot boat in 45 knots of wind. You know, a set day, to have us lose 24 hours, an entire day at sea, to go out and dump the nets off is ridiculous, and it's not necessary. You know, maybe if you want to put something different, you know what I mean, at least let us do time served for the day we set the nets, how long it takes us to rent them out and dump them and then go haul the next day and start whacking us with the 24 hours. But to have us throw away 24 hours to go for a boat ride and have zero landings, I think that's a little much, and I definitely urge you to allow the stand-up nets, you know, in those areas. We, you know, it's not going to impact flounders. Thank you.
Anyone else? Back to the council. Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, Tom, do these analyses in any way factor in the consequences of our removing the days at sea leasing cap?
Well, no, because that wasn't an option in the amendment. To be perfectly honest, if anyone reads the biological impact section, we don't give any credit for biological effects of these measures because we don't know what it is.
Okay, so that's a bit of uncertainty. We don't know what the effects of removing the days at sea leasing cap will be. Likely, it'll mean more days at sea will be available to be used in different areas, such as the Gulf of Maine. That's a concern. And I don't know how to address that concern because there are no analyses before us that would enable us to wrestle with that one. Also, Tom, these options, 3A specifically, note that the cod limit in the Gulf of Maine will go up meaningfully, significantly. I apologize for not asking you this before, but in light of the fact that we are going to go with the new control rule and that there will be an impact on Gulf of Maine codfish, that is, we have to cut not by 21%, but by 40-some-odd percent. Does that in any way affect the rationale for having those specific increases in the cod limit for that option 3A or for the other options for that matter? Are you in a position to address that?
Well, if you look at Table 5 on page 4 of the PDT report, a 41% change in mortality for Gulf of Maine cod translates, I believe, into a 36% reduction in exploitation. And we think, oh, I'm sorry, I'm looking at the wrong table. And give me a minute to find it. But option 3A is expected to give us a 52% reduction in exploitation for Gulf of Maine cod. So there's a considerable buffer there. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing, because if you look in Framework 42 and in Amendment 16, when we go back and try and evaluate how well the closed area model does, the last time we evaluated it, which was the Framework 42 measures are evaluated in Amendment 16, it seems like the closed area model may overestimate the impacts on Gulf of Maine cod, and we have a number of theories why that is. We don't really know exactly why that is. So the fact that this particular model result seems to indicate we'll get more than we need is probably a good thing.
Okay, if I may, Mr. Chairman, that's a good point, Tom. Thank you for reminding me of that. Yeah, table 168 on page 486 of the analyses behind Amendment 16 does make that point. We only need a 19% reduction in exploitation. That's table 168. We need a 19% reduction. Area 3A gets us an anticipated 52% reduction. Therefore, I guess we don't have to worry about taking away the days at sea cap, days at sea leasing cap. There's a buffer built into this analysis. So we don't know what the actual percent cut will be, but it certainly is likely to be greater than the required 19%. All right, that helps me out. Thank you.
Jim Allen?
Yeah, I got a few points to make. Tom, in the economic analysis, I note that 3A has the least, the least negative, smallest negative economic impact when I compared it to the other two options in the document. And my question is, has 2A and 4 economic analysis been updated to the additional measures that you mentioned earlier that we would have to take because of the new reductions we need in cod?
No, we have not.
Okay, so that would tell me that the negative impacts of those is going to be greater. So the gap between the 3A and 2 and 4 is going to increase. So the one with the least economic impact is 3A. It meets the biological objectives, and as it is, if I'm reading this right, and it has the least economic impact. I mean, it just kind of narrows our choices here to which one we're going to pick.
The discussion also points out, however, that, as I mentioned a minute ago, 3A, we really can't evaluate the economic impacts of these restricted gear areas. And so we have some trouble, and we urge caution in comparing the economic impacts across these alternatives, because there's things we cannot evaluate in more than a qualitative way. You have to be careful looking at the columns and drawing firm conclusions about which one has more or less economic impact. That's a problem complicated in this amendment that we didn't really face in previous amendments.
Okay, well, that confuses me a little bit. But I would like to follow up with the service on the amendment that we passed earlier, and I don't know if we want to revisit it, but was it the intent to restrict 6.5-inch stand-up gillnets in these restricted gear areas? And is that, in effect, what we've done?
I guess I'd throw that question back to Tom or the committee. I was working from the language that's actually in the amendment, and all it says on sink gillnets is no tie-down nets allowed unless using mesh over 8 inches.
I think the intent was to allow no tie-down nets that unless they're over 8 inches, but stand-up nets are 6.5 are okay. So is that the right read, Tom?
Well, I think it is. I mean, okay. These restricted gear areas and the gears were actually identified by the committee. These were not PDT recommendations, but I think the intent was these were designed primarily to reduce flounder catches.
Anything further from the council? Terry Stockwell.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. The comments about stand-up gear, spot on. But it doesn't appear that I need to make a motion to amend. But with that included in the list of gears that are authorized to fish in the restricted areas, while it's quite certain that each one of these measures are going to wreak havoc on the common pool, I reluctantly support 3A.
What else from the council? Dave Gatham.
Well, I feel like I'm between a rock and a hard place here because I said I'd never support anything with a 24-hour clock. I think it's a serious safety concern. I don't know how to vote here. I also want to call attention of the council to the fact that the net economic changes may be the least, but the changes for various vessel classes could be enormous within that. Because if you're a boat that's already fishing 24 hours, you've gone from being counted at 2-to-1 to being counted at 1-to-1. So you've got 50% more time. If you're a boat that's day gill netter that is charged 15 hours under the old regime, 7 hours times two, and was 7.5 times two, I guess. Now you're being charged 24 hours, so your time's being counted at 3-to-1 to fish in the same place. And if you're a day boat dragger and you fish, say, 5 or 6 hours now, your time's being counted at 4-to-1. But if you're a trip boat that can come in and load up now on Gulf of Maine cod on its way home from an offshore trip, you know, your whole trip's going to be counted at 1-to-1. So you have no reason now not to stop off on Middle Bank on your way home and catch 8 or 10,000 pounds of cod. So to say this has no impacts is a pretty gross miscarriage of justice to me. But when you do, you know, if you do the actual math on, and I have to ask Tom a question here, the updated math on 2A with the Pollock, what are the differential counting rates now for the various areas to meet the mortality objectives for Pollock?
Under option 2A? There is no differential days at sea counting in option 3A. Okay. Inshore Gulf of Maine is 2.5-to-1, offshore is 2-to-1, Georgia's Bank is 1.5-to-1, and southern New England is 2-to-1. So I think it goes down in southern New England, up slightly, I think, in Georgia's Bank, and up in the inshore Gulf of Maine and offshore Gulf of Maine.
Okay, so again, I just want people to be aware that you're moving things around here as to who pays the price for this. The inshore boats are paying the heaviest price for this because they don't fish 24 hours. And you're providing incentive for them now to fish 24 hours, especially the small dragons. And that could have horrendous effects on discards. Absolutely horrendous. If you can catch what you need in 15 minutes, what are you going to do for the next 23 hours and 45 minutes? You know, you only got 20 days a year. I doubt you're going home. Like I said, if you can catch 2,000 pounds of cod in 15 minutes, let's see here. You know, what's that, almost 115-minute periods times 2,000. You have the situation where somebody could be discarding, if their arms don't fall off, you know, 100,000 pounds of cod in a 24-hour period to catch because they're desperate, Rodney. I don't think they're going to have any choice. I'm just pointing all these things out to people because I want people to be aware of what it is that they're doing here. And
sucks no matter what.
I agree it sucks no matter what. But it still needs to be on the record that this could have huge, serious effects. And I will say if this passes, I'd probably have to change my vote on the hard tax, and I'll probably have to support the hard tax because I don't think if we don't do it with no cap on days at sea leasing, I think that the potential to run over here on the catch is extraordinarily high.
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, the division's gone on record, submitted formal comments regarding our support for option 3A. All the options are not good, of course, in terms of the significant impact that it will have. Notably, the rather dramatic loss in yield from those stocks where yield should be taken. There is a lot of yield that will be foregone, and that's evident in Table 168 that I referenced before. Option 3A has the greatest effect. It has a huge impact in terms of the exploitation reduction that we will get relative to what we need to achieve. One reason why we selected that option, 3A, is that it would seem to minimize the chance or reduce the chance for accountability measures, whatever they may be, from kicking in, because this is bound to have a very dramatic effect on yield, on catch of all of the different stocks. In addition, it also provides some level of comfort regarding our ability to account for the days at sea leasing that will occur and the fact that the cap will be removed on days at sea leasing. It does indeed have the 24-hour count of a days at sea being used. David's points are very legitimate, and I'm glad he put them on the record, but it does, with the 24-hour clock counting, it does prevent what has been happening for a long time now, and that is the breaking of a day at sea up into minutes. And that has resulted in our inability to cut down on the effort that we need to achieve. So that is the principal logic for our supporting option 3A.
Tom Neese.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify, I misspoke earlier. The differences between the new option 2A and the old option 2A, I got the differential days at sea rates wrong. The new option 2A rates decrease in southern New England from 3-1 to 2-1. They decrease on Georgia's Bank from 2.25-1 to 1.5-1. And they increase on the Gulf of Maine offshore from 1.25-1 to 2-1. And then they increase in the Gulf of Maine inshore from 2.25-1 to 2.5-1. I think I said they went up on Georgia's Bank, and they did not.
Doug Grapp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to make a substitute motion to adopt option 2 with modification 2 from the 612 PDT report on page 4, and if I get a second to this, I'll explain my reasoning behind it.
Does that say what you want it to say?
It should say adopt option 2 with modification number 2 from the June 12th PDT report, page 4.
Page 4?
I can be there. Sure.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave Gaithel. Discussion. Jim Otham.
I think he means option 2A. Is that correct?
Correct.
Discussion. Doug Grout.
My reasoning for this is... I have many reasons for this. One, as stated by Tom, it meets all the reductions in mortality that we need, with the exception of windowpane north and blackback in southern New England, which again is something that option 3A does not. And in fact, according to Tom's analysis, it provides a slightly greater reduction in mortality for blackback in southern New England. It also, while meeting these mortality objectives, provides slightly greater yield for several species, including Georgia's Bank cod, Gulf of Maine cod, Georgia's Bank haddock, Georgia's Bank and Gulf of Maine winter flounder, yellowtail flounder and Cape Cod, Gulf of Maine and Georgia's Bank. So for those reasons, and some of the reasons that Dave had expounded upon before, I feel that this is the better option to go with for the council at this point.
Dr. Pierce.
I still favor 3A. I understand Doug's motivation for it, and at first blush, one would think it would be an alternative that we could actually consider. But Recognizing that the numbers in Table 168 are not exactly finite and precise, and there's a lot of uncertainty within that table, I'm still inclined to favor a real, precautionary outlook or stance relative to Gulf of Maine codfish, where I see that with 3A, we have projected 52% cut in exploitation versus a required 19. If we go to option 2A, it's 22% achieved versus 19 needed, and that's too close, especially in light of the days at sea leasing cap being removed. I really do believe effort's going to be drawn to the Gulf of Maine, especially with the increased trip limit for Gulf of Maine codfish. To me, that particular option, while somewhat attractive, is a bit too risky.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I listened to Dave Gaitho's comments on discarding, and obviously that's something I think that we want to avoid. It's something that certainly bothers me. I'm having trouble sort of measuring those two up, you know, and listening to people that came to the public hearings and what the industry said. I think, you know, it was a case of hold your nose and pick 3A. But I've got to be honest and say I'm vacillating back and forth. I did want to say one thing, David, about your 19% number. That's not currently the correct number. It's larger than that. Yeah.
What is it? 36.
36. Oh, okay. So it's no longer. So we no longer need 19%. It's been refined to be 36%. Okay. Well, then option 2A would not do the job. Okay.
The revised option 2A does do the job.
That's with the PDT.
Item 5, David, is the PDT memo with the revised option 2A. Mike Leary.
Yeah, thank you. I have a question for Tom Meese, I guess. So these days at sea reduction, you're already going to take the 18% that was in place May 1st, 2009, and then you're going to put an additional 30% on your allocation, your AB day split?
No. It's not in addition to the 18%.
So it's 30% total from your
yes.
framework 42 baseline?
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
He picked mod 2, 35. So it's 35%.
Oh, 35, okay.
Anyone else on the council on the motion to amend? Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, sorry, with that correction, again, thanks for pointing that out, Rip. The other reason why I don't favor 2A is that it's more of a patchwork quilt of differential days at sea counting areas, and I feel that complicates matters. It gets us into the monitoring problems that we have with that particular strategy, and it's not as simple in terms of how we would work with the strategy as opposed to 3A.
Anyone else on the motion to amend? Terry Stockwell.
Yeah, I'm opposed to the motion to amend. It's making something bad even more complicated. And I'm looking at the chart right now of where the proposed areas are, and it divides a number of areas, including one just east of here. And the number of people sitting in the audience right now that are going to be disproportionately impacted by that, as well as folks from the Cape. I stand by option 3A.
Anything further? And the motion to amend. Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. 4. Opposed. Twelve opposed. Abstentions. 1 abstention. The motion to amend fails. 4-12 with 1 abstention. Back on the main motion as amended. Anything further? Rodney, is that a hand up? Do you feel like talking? No? Okay. Anything further? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Fifteen in favor, opposed? One. Abstentions? One. 15-1-1, the motion is amended, carries. 15-1-1. Rip.
We will move on to recreational measures, section 4.4.3. I'll turn it over to Tom for any comments.
There are a number of issues in this section. They fall into really three categories, I think. Provisions for landing fillets, removal of the limit on hooks for the recreational fishery, and then recreational mortality measures. I'm going to talk about the first two because I think the third one may take some further discussion in light of the choice of allocation years and the decision on incorporating the SSC's control rules into the amendment. With respect to landing fillets, technically right now it's illegal to land fillets with the skin off. That's option three. There are two options proposed which would allow recreational fishermen to land fillets legally with the skin off. For the first one, it allows them to be landed with the skin off and the fillets must be from legal size fish. The second option, fillets can be landed with the skin off, but they must have some skin on board to identify the fillet, and the fillet must meet the minimum size limits. But notice that this provision for the skin on only applies if there is an allocation of those fish. So this would apply presumably for Gulf of Maine cod and Gulf of Maine haddock alone. We did receive public comments.
There was very little feedback on the fillet issue, and just a few comments supporting removal of the limits on hooks.
The recreational AP supported the recreational AP supported option one, fillets can be landed with a skin off fillets from legal sized fish. The RAP also supported the removal of the hook limits. And that's it for that. I have a committee motion on behalf of the committee. I move that the council adopt first section 4.3.2.1. Oh, excuse me. I've gone to the wrong page. Where did I get lost?
On page three. On page three it starts.
Yeah. Excuse me. That on behalf of the committee, that the council adopt section 4.4.3.1, option two, fillets landed with skin on for identification purposes, but remove fillets must meet minimum size limits and replace with fillets must be from legal size fish. 910. And secondly, section 4.4.3.2, option two, removal of limit of number of hooks per line. 802.
Committee motions, both of them. I'll go to the audience. Dave Marciano.
Yes, I'm kind of neutral on the idea you got in the board there. I just want to point something out that you just had the common pool commercial fleet go to a 24-hour day, and we're still going to be limited by the number of hooks we fish, and the cod trip limit increases substantially, but we still cannot fish more gear. This, again, screams about the flawed nature of your common pool document. You know, it makes no sense. We have no limits on landing of haddock. The cod trip limit more than doubles, almost triples. And we're still bound by all the restrictive measures, restricted in number of nets we can fish, restricted to 2,500 hooks. And in a fishery like this, you're proposing, where there is limits on numbers of fish caught, to remove the numbers of hooks that they can fish. That just doesn't pass the straight fate test, and I hope you realize that you do need to go and correct some of the things that are in the common pool, especially now since we are going to go with the 24-hour day. It's just patently wrong to leave those old restrictions in place. Thank you.
Anyone else? Back to the council. Pat?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a motion to amend. So let me offer the motion, and then I can give some rationale for it. That under Section 4.4.3.1, to require that all groundfish species have at least 2 square inches of skin on the fillet.
Is there a second? Seconded by Rodney. Pat?
Yeah, this, frankly, this just doesn't make any sense as it's written, where it would only apply to species with a recreational allocation of an ACL. This is also used to enforce size limits, and many of the other stocks have size limits. And if it, any of the species are excluded, then all you have to do is take the skin off and claim it was one of those species. So if it's going to be useful at all, or if it's going to be enforceable at all, it really has to be all species.
Council? Frank?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I see this as a state issue, because right now this is only going to really apply to party and charter boats. Private recreational are going to do whatever they want with their fillets. When they get back to shore, there's no prohibition on it. So this is only going to apply to federally permitted vessels. And I think it's a state issue, and I think it should be dealt with by the states. Because right now, unless the states change the regulations, it's going to be fillet what you want as a recreational person. And it's a party and charter boat. When they get back to the dock, they're all going to be skinning them anyway. So it's not a federal issue. And I don't see it. You can't tell the minimum size of a fish once it's filleted whether the skin's on or off.
Anyone else in the council? Jamal?
What's the no-action alternative in this? With current, in other words, the current regs? All the skin has to be on? I just wanted to be clear.
Terry Stockwell.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I support this amendment. From the state perspective, we're going to be doing a fair amount of rulemaking to implement Amendment 16, and this is just one more issue for us to add. It'd be easier for me, and I don't know about the other states, if it was included in the entire package. I think our enforcement would support it, and it would be easier on my shop as well.
Doug?
Yeah, if you'll remember, the original motion that got into the document was made by me. One of the things as this document came together that I had heartburn with was, and it was probably the way I worded the motion, was that it didn't apply to all groundfish species, because I looked at this from the bag limit standpoint, that you need to be able, if you have a 10-fish bag limit on cod, you need to be able to identify that species, and you need at least that 2 square inches for identification. And our law enforcement has said that if we don't have some skin on, even though you may say that you can look at the meat and identify it, it's useless in court.
Anyone else in the council? Dave Gaethel.
Yes, a question for Pat through you, Mr. Chair, to see if she wants to perfect this a little bit. All groundfish species, I don't think wolffish and cusca, are they considered a groundfish?
I mean, I think you at least have to have Wolfish on here because, right? It is? Okay.
It's all now right. Part of the management plan.
Well, okay.
But there's not going to
will
be.
Well, that's my point. The only way you're going to be able to tell if somebody has a Wolfish or not is to have skin on the fillet. I mean, once you know, whitefish fillets are whitefish fillets. Probably trained professionals can tell, but trained professionals telling it and proving it are two different things. And the only other way you can prove it is with DNA analysis of the sample. So, you know, I think we have to have this. I still don't quite understand what the big deal is, but, you know, I will support the motion.
Anything further before I call a question? Ready? All those in favor, raise your hand. Opposed? Two. Motion to amend carries 14 to 2. Now we're on the main motion as amended. Anything further in the skin-on, skin-off debate? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Fifteen. Opposed? Two. Motion carries 15 to 2.
Accountability.
The next one is we have 44331.
Karen, can you scroll down a minute?
I'm sorry for the delay here. Tom and I were just discussing this. We had a motion here which was dependent upon picking the years of 96 to 2006 for the recreational fishery. Since we picked the 2001 to 2006 years, it originally was indicated that we didn't have to make any reduction for Gulf of Maine cod for the recreational fishery. However, since we have adopted the ABC control rule, that does require some additional reduction in Gulf of Maine cod. I guess what I'm sort of stumbling on how to make a motion for this, but I can try something to see if it works. I would move that the council adopts
option three.
Option three of 4-4-3-3-1, a change in season for Gulf of Maine cod.
Is there a second? Seconded by Frank.
Yeah, I'll second it, but if Rip would indulge me, I think it would be better if it said to modify option three to meet the requirement.
Please, yes, that's great.
All right, not a second.
Discussion. Dr. Pierce.
Okay. In light of what we learned from what we learned this morning, is there any indication as to what sort of a change in season we would require? Obviously, the option we have before us that's not a viable one is to prohibit it from November 1 through April 15. Is this any insight, Rip or Tom, as to the narrowness of the window? Or is that something that needs to be just analyzed and we learn later on?
Well, this is a little bit preliminary, but I think it's accurate, but it's preliminary. So I kind of like the language that says as required. Our data, the needed mortality change by my calculations, and this probably needs to be confirmed, is about a 23% reduction, which is very close to the range that's needed under option three that we have in the document where we needed a 27% reduction. Our recreational data is the tool we use to evaluate these measures. It compiles the data monthly, and if you knock off the whole month of April, you get about a 40% reduction in recreational harvest. So you need something less than a month. We don't have the data to tell you exactly where it is in the month. I'm guessing that the other PDT members will look at this and say, okay, you need about 2 weeks, which is what we did on the first option. This relates to Gene's earlier advice, I guess in part, in that when we took this document out to public hearing, we said that if you choose 01 to 06, there's no change in Gulf of Maine mortality needed. And so this is a divergence from that, what went out to the public. You know, I'd also just point out that while we think our closed area model has a pretty good track record of predicting changes in fishing mortality rates, I'm not sure our recreational measures have as good a track record as doing that when we try and design these measures. It seems to be more variable, perhaps in part because of the data that comes in.
Anyone else in the council? Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. Doug.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if this is the appropriate time and place. I was hoping to make this motion before this came up because I think it may have effects on it. If I'm out of order, rule me out of order. But I guess what I'll do is make my motion, see if I get a second, and then we'll go from there. I would like to move reconsideration of the council's decision yesterday on section 4.3.5.2 that allocated.
Doug, I'm sorry. We have a motion on the board, and your motion wouldn't be amending that motion. If I'm reading the process right. Dave Gith.
So the question would be, from a parliamentary procedure, would we want to table this to a time certain and then have Doug put his motion up since it's going to affect the outcome of this motion, or do we vote this up or down and then perhaps have to come back and reconsider this?
Your first option is certainly available to you.
Well, then I would move to table this to a time certain.
Seconded by Rodney. All those in favor, raise your hand. Seven. Opposed? Eight. Abstentions? One. Motion to table fails. 7-8-1. back on the motion on the board as modified. Anything further? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Sixteen opposed. Abstentions. One. Okay, we're going to break for lunch here. Be back at 1:30.
Sun is out.